The first lesson today is from the book of Psalms, Psalm number 49. Hear this, all you people. Give ear, all inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. My mouth shall speak wisdom. The meditation of my heart shall be understanding. I will incline my ear to a proverb. I will solve my riddle to the music of the harp. Why should I fear in times of trouble when the iniquity of my persecutors surrounds me? Those who trust in their wealth and boast of the abundance of their riches, truly no ransom avails for one's life. There is no price one can give to God for it, for the ransom of life is costly and can never suffice that one should live on forever and never see the grave. When we look at the wise, they die. Fool and dolt perish together and leave their wealth to others. Their graves are their homes forever, their dwelling places to all generations. Though they named lands their own, mortals cannot abide in their pomp. They are like the animals that perish. Such is the fate of the foolhardy, the end of those who are pleased with their lot. Like sheep, they are appointed for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd. Straight to the grave they descend, and their form shall waste away. Sheol shall be their home. But God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. Do not be afraid when some become rich, when the wealth of their houses increases. For when they die, they will carry nothing away. Their wealth will not go down after them. Though in their lifetime they count themselves happy, for you are praised when you do well for yourself. They will go to the company of their ancestors who will never again see the light. Mortals cannot abide in their pomp. They are like the animals that perish. The second lesson for today is from John chapter 4, verses 6 through 30 and then 39 to 42. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired out by his journey, was sitting by the well. It was about noon. A Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." His disciples had gone to the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria? Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have no bucket, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us the well and with his sons and his flocks drank from it?" Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but those who drink the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give will become in them a spring of water gushing up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I may never be thirsty or have to keep coming here to draw water." Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come back." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You're right in saying I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one you have now is not your husband. What you have said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you say that the place where people must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father seeks such as these to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth." The woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will proclaim all things to us." Jesus said to her, "I am he, the one who is speaking to you." Just then his disciples came. They were astonished that he was speaking with a woman, but no one said, "What do you want?" or "Why are you speaking with her?" Then the woman left her water jar and went back to the city. She said to the people, "Come and see a man who told me everything I have ever done. He cannot be the Messiah, can he?" They left the city and were on their way to him. Many Samaritans from that city believed in him because of the woman's testimony, "He told me everything I have ever done." So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed there for 2 days, and many more believed because of his word. They said to the woman, "It is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this is truly the Savior of the world." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Recently, my granddaughter, who's in high school, Skyped me. I know how to Skype. Me, the old English teacher, she Skyped to ask me if I would help her with her geometry project. I know, that's weird. Anyway, a part of her assignment was to draw a picture using perspective, and then to write a paper of explanation that was supposedly the geometry connection about how that worked. Perspective. And suddenly I was back in elementary school drawing those two lines down the middle of the paper that got ever closer to each other. Any of you remember that exercise? Perspective. Yes. The first art lesson in perspective. And I was dazzled at the time. I thought, so that's how they do that. It was amazing. As I grew up, my understanding of perspective became a little bit more sophisticated than that. But that first lesson taught me that where you stand is critical to what you see and how you see it. Perspective. And I thought, as I prepared for this morning's lesson, in order to understand John and what he's saying, we need to understand that our perspective is very different from theirs. Time and place, very different. And also, that I realized that once we understand that, that this text really sends an important message to all of us. It's also very contemporary. Perspective. As Jesus walked toward Jacob's well that day, I think he must have been thinking all about his ministry and how it had been received. I wonder if he'd already seen enough hostility to anticipate the confrontations that were sure to come and the end that was so inevitable. There was no doubt that he and his disciples were attracting attention, the wrong kind of attention, and no doubt that was the right way to suspend their teaching and baptizing in Judea and return to the relative security of Galilee. Time to go. Time for a time out. So they decided to go home by the shortest route, which traveled straight through Samaria. Not a place, you may know, that was a great place for a Jew to travel. But it was faster, and this route pretty well precluded the Jewish religious authorities from following them. It was ironic that Jesus and his band were safer in the company of apostates than in the territory of the faithful. But sometimes life is like that. The direct route that Jesus and his disciples had taken took them along a ridge to Jacob's well. For travelers on foot in the Mideast then, and probably as now, a well or a spring on the way was good news, maybe even critical news. Cool water for sure, a little shade, rest and renewal for the journey. And this particular historic well meant being in the presence of the fathers. Jacob had drunk from this well, he and his family and their livestock for generations. It was almost noon when they approached the well, and Jesus was already tired, John tells us. The story suggests that he sent his disciples off to Sychar, maybe to get food, or maybe to get them away. Maybe Jesus just needed a minute to himself. The Gospels tell us often that he needed some time to himself. And what better place than this sacred site where the generations had listened to God for 1,000 years? It was the 6th hour, it says, when he finally sat down by the well, hot and exhausted, as you can imagine, in that climate. And then the quiet that he'd expected was rudely broken by a woman approaching with her bucket and a jar for water. Huh. Now, not a big deal in our life and time, right? But perspective. For Jesus, why would a woman be coming here for water? There must have been a well in Sychar. And even if not, why had she come so far in the heat of the day and by herself? Women in the Mideast drew water together as a group in the cool of the morning and early evening. Only a bad woman would come alone at this time of day. She was either a social outcast or someone who wanted to contact the travelers who often stopped by this well at noon. He might have looked at her, straight at her, as she walked up to the path, but probably not. It wouldn't have been proper. And it's certain that she would not have let her eyes meet his, not for a second. Propriety demanded that the strange man sitting on the rim of the well withdraw a respectful distance to allow her to do her work in safety and silence. But he didn't withdraw. He broke the silence and a taboo or two when he spoke to her and said, "Woman, would you give me a drink?" Well, then she looked at him. She didn't recognize him. His dress and his accent clearly indicated him as a foreigner and a Jew, and he was speaking to her. Not only a Samaritan, but a woman. Was he alone? Was this some kind of a trap? She was uncomfortable. "How is it," she said, "that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" A simple question that hit a dozen unspoken, like, "What did you say? Give you a drink? From what? To you, everything I touch is impure, defiled. And why are you even talking to me, a Samaritan, a woman, and you a stranger and a Jew? Not to mention, why are you asking me for favors? Do I look like your mother or your sister? What makes you think I would do anything for you? Would you do something for me if I asked you? If your friends were here?" Not likely. But because of their different perspective from place and time, all John has to record as Jesus' response is, "How is it that you..." No, as she asks him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" With all those underlying questions. And Jesus said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you today for your help, you would have asked me for help and I would have given it to you. Not just water, but living water." She bristles a little bit at that. "With what will you draw living water?" Or any water for that matter. The well is deep and you don't even have a bucket. That much I can see. Jacob, the father of Israel, gave the well to his son and him to us many years ago. He needed a bucket to draw water. Are you greater than he? Her manner, if not her words, would have said that. Sister, Jesus said, the water in this well is not the water I speak of. You have come here before, and you know this water quenches thirst for a while, but only for a while. The living water I speak of, the living water of God, is enduring. That water becomes a saving fountain in each of us. And with that, she stops. Saving fountain in each of us. She thought, that's what I need. That's what I want. Water that satisfies for more than a moment. Something that does not always keep me looking for more. Maybe she imagined a different life for a minute. With the water he's speaking of, could it be that she would not always be one step behind? With this water, might she be able to get some control over her own life and not be constantly bargaining with others for approval, for protection, for any standing? Did this man have an answer? Her answer? Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw. Okay, she seems to be saying, okay, change my life. I would want this. And Jesus said, go, call your husband to come. Oh, I have no husband. And it's not for the want of trying, she thought. Jesus said, you're right in saying I have no husband, for you've had five, and the one you have now is not your husband. What you have said is true. And it was, sort of. You are a prophet. Another change of perspective, she said. Or else, how could you know these things? But you are a Jewish prophet, and I'm a Samaritan woman, and yet you bring your gift to me. And the recognition begins to dawn on her, laced with doubt still. And with Jesus' reply, she moves a step. Jesus said, in time to come, temples here or there will not matter. It will be the substance of faith, not the shape of faith, that matters. That may be, I don't know, she replied, but this I know. When Christ comes, he will tell us what to believe. And she's leaning in. I am he. And in that moment, she believed. No fireworks, no applause. She just hurried to share the good news, to tell what she'd seen and heard, to become the gospel's first woman evangelist, if you will. To invite them with Jesus' first words of invitation. Come and see. As you can probably tell, I really like this story. And I really like this woman. I like her and her spunk. And despite everything, somehow her sense of her own value and her unwillingness to be put down by any man just because he's a man, and this Jew just because he's a Jew, and because Jews as a group thought Samaritans unworthy as a group. She seems not to be shameless exactly. She knows who she is. But at the same time, she is not willing to be heckled by just any pious preacher who passed by either. We have no way of knowing, really, what brought her to the well at noon that day. And we have no idea how a little girl grew up to have five husbands and a consort. And it didn't matter to Jesus. She isn't presented as anybody's ideal citizen. She's a person, and she's alive, and she seems to have a sense of who she is and who she isn't and what she wants. And she is, not by her choice, vulnerable. To men, to her neighbors, to propriety, to time, to the body's aging process, to life, to anyone who offers water that might slake her drying thirst. And so that day she was vulnerable and open to the Christ who met her going for water again in the noonday sun. And he held out living water, life in the presence of God, and she took it, just like that. Because of her change of perspective. An Eastern Orthodox saint, Ephrem of the Syrian, in the 4th century, described this passage like this. At the beginning of the conversation, Jesus did not make himself known to her. So first, she caught sight of a thirsty man. Then a Jew. Then a rabbi. Afterwards, a prophet. And last of all, the Messiah. She tried to get the better of the thirsty man. She showed dislike of the Jew. She heckled the rabbi, and she was swept off her feet by the prophet, and she adored the Christ. Jesus meets a woman who got it wrong mostly, probably, but in her vulnerability, she was open to seeing from a different perspective, and then she got it right. And Jesus took the thirst that drove her and led her to the fountain of life. Just like that. We like to think we're in control, right, of our lives. And that we can do good and love the Lord and it will be okay, right? But I look around and I think that probably you've mostly experienced enough life to know that this isn't necessarily how it goes. For so many people, this is not how it goes. And here we all are, not in control, not perfect, not even so very good always. But as life unfolds, willing to change perspective maybe, to step to the left or the right, and look from a different place, to see the Christ sitting before us. And to see Christ in those different from us, maybe. So where are your vulnerable places? What failures haunt you? What thirst drives you? What awakens you in the night? It's in the willingness to trust and be vulnerable, to look again from a different place, that this woman received the Christ. And there is a place for her, and there is a place for you and for us to be open to it, to receive it, and to share it as Christ for her, for us, just like that.